Bring you greetings in Christ's name from the brethren at Bethel Christian Brotherhood, a small congregation in north central Wisconsin. It's been a while since I've been here, and it's wonderful to be back among you. Every time I come, I meet new people, see new faces, and some old ones along with that. So it's really good to be here with you. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father, we look to you for the strength that we need. Without thee as a divine source of wisdom, power, and understanding, we gather in vain. So we ask for your Spirit, Lord, first in me, in this needy soul that I am, but also the Spirit of the listening, as we heard, being willing to listen, being able to have ears that can hear, hearts which can perceive, and minds that can think and understand. This is also a gift from you, O Lord. We ask you to do that for us this morning. We commit it to you in Jesus' name. Amen. You can turn with me to the book of Proverbs, the first chapter. I asked Brother Mark if I could share a message to encourage you. I shared it a couple weeks ago in our home congregation, and it seemed to be a blessing. I am guessing in your church, as in ours, you have a number of homeschooling families, and you give yourself to teaching your children. I don't mean to be biased towards homeschooling, but I'll tell you right up front, I am. It's just, we have raised our five children in the rural areas of Wisconsin for the last 30 years and have found it to be a tremendous blessing for us. I'm not trying to say that if you do not homeschool your children that you are bad or you do not mean to condemn you. But I want to lift up the hands of those who are taking up, and I'm going to say taking up their cross of homeschooling. Because it's huge. It's a major, major undertaking, and you sisters and you men that are partaking in that, you need all the help you can get. We remembered the days when we had a young fledgling family and the encouragement that older ones could come alongside to help us. Sometimes it was helping us with by sending us older girls, and sometimes it was helping us by just encouraging us, just keep on. It's okay if you're a little bit untucked and unraveled. That all comes out in the wash at the end. And I want to share this message with you called home fires. Home fires. Because without a fire in our home, without a fire in our hearts, we actually have very little benefit from homeschooling. But I trust that through this, you can be inspired, you can be encouraged. And if you're not a homeschooling family, please do not be discouraged by this message. I think there'll be something in principle for you that you can understand for your own home if you choose to use a Christian school. I am sure that the Lord can meet you there as well. So do not feel condemned by me, but I am biased toward homeschooling, and I do want to bring forth a message of encouragement to you. I want to encourage us to light the home fires in our hearts. And so we're going to light some fires this morning. Physically as well. See if I can do this without burning the building down. Proverbs 1, 9 or 7 through 9, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. And Brother Paul spoke to our children so well about learning how to learn. And that's really what homeschooling is. It's learning how to learn and how to seek and to enjoy and to like and to create an appetite for learning and instruction. Smart Alex do not have an appetite for learning. They have an appetite for pressing their own way and for proving their own point. But a true learner is a true child of God is necessary for us to learn how to learn. Somebody heard I was going to preach on this, and they said, how are you going to speak for an hour out of the Bible on homeschooling? I realize you can share your opinions for an hour, but can you speak for an hour out of the Word of God on schooling your children? And I'm sure there's going to be some opinion in this, but I can give you principle, and I want us to have principle. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. It's a foolish child who is a smart aleck. Now, I have a lovely grandchild, and his name happens to be Alec. And so you can imagine what might happen around him at times. But at the same time, he's going to have to, does the name make the man, or does the man make the name? And he will learn to be an Alec, hopefully, who has learned how to learn. I only read you verse 7 out of Proverbs 1. It's interesting because this is a proverb written to children, but it has tremendous instruction for parents. And that's what I want to teach from here. My son, hear the instruction of thy father. You've got to listen to the instruction of your father. And then it gives another point there. It's forsake not the law of thy mother. Two entirely different words. Now, the word instruction would be what you tend to think. It simply is musar in the Hebrew, and it's chastisement, check, correction, discipline, doctrine, instruction, or rebuke. Kind of like what fathers do. They set things straight. They are there to straighten out, to correct, to bring in a check, to check the things out, make sure things are going. Hear the instruction of your father. But then it goes on to say, forsake not the law of your mother. And that word, which was surprising to me when I looked up, is the word actually Torah. Torah meaning the Pentateuch, or the first five books of Moses. And Moses had brought the law, the Torah, to the people, and that apparently the mothers were teaching the Torah to their young children. And I'm sure the fathers were too. As you read in Deuteronomy 6, Moses told them, I says, I want you to love the Lord with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. And I want you to teach them diligently to your children. When you sit down, you teach them. When you rise up, you teach them. You put that as frontless before their eyes, and you make sure that the laws of God are in their hearts. That was an important message. It was a new message because these were slaves. And as far as we know, they did not have the ability to read and write. Moses had learned how to read and write because all the wisdom of Egypt had been given to him. And he brought and propagated that into Israel. But they had been slaves for 400 years. And before that, they were nomads traveling around the land of Canaan. But the message to the children is, forsake not the instructions of your father and the law of your mother. Why? He gives also the benefit and the reward. They shall be an ornament of grace to your head and as chains about thy neck. Now, I don't know how that sounds to you. Would you like to have your parents holding a chain around your neck and dragging you wherever you wanted to go? That's not really what Solomon was talking about. He wasn't talking about a ball and chain or a chain that's going to hold you or handcuff you and make you do whatever you're supposed to do. Matter of fact, this chain was actually considered to be a golden chain. It is a chain of honor, a chain of reward, something that actually glorifies you. If you can get instruction, and if you can receive the law, and if you can be taught, it will be a badge or a chain of honor to you as young children. Do you want it? Well, maybe. Maybe not. Who ever got one anyhow? I want to show you four homeschooled boys here. There are four boys who were schooled at home. I don't know if they were taught anywhere else. But they had been taught very well by somebody, and I'm assuming it was their parents. Because whenever they were taken away, some soldiers had come and drug them out of their home and had taken them to a far-off land, far away from their parents, far away from any accountability, and offered the life of the world. Anything you want, Whatever food you want, whatever drink you want, whatever you want to wear, it's yours. What would you do if you had that kind of liberty? If you could listen to any kind of music you wanted to listen to, eat any kind of food that you wanted to, dress and go and live life however you desire to do, children, what would you do different than what you're doing right now? Some of you would be wise enough to walk in the footprints of your parents. Some of you would be foolish enough to cast it all away and live your life however it you felt like. Those that cast it all away, Solomon says, are foolish children. Here are four well-schooled boys, and their names were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The king had asked them to bring children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful, or able to in wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such has had ability to stand in the king's palace, whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And these four boys were brought with all of them. How do you suppose these homeschool boys fared among all the other children that were brought before? Well, we'll give you a snapshot of the first one. Because as these boys gave themselves to learning, you remember, they were given anything they wanted. And they says, look, we don't want your meat. We don't want your wine. What we want is pulse, vegetables, and water. And the man that's in charge of it says, look, my head's going to get cut off if I present these pale, scraggly boys before the king. I'm not willing to risk it. He says, hey, you try us out. Try us out for 10 days and give us what we want and see for yourself. Not in 10 days, I doubt whether in a normal situation what would actually change. But what happens changed was in their conscience and in their desires, because their parents had taught them something and they wanted to despise not the wisdom and instruction that they had been learned at home. And you know, after 10 days, they were fairer and brighter. Their eyes were enlightened. Now, you remember these, we don't know exactly when these boys were, but as those that study it out have drop them back into the era when King Josiah was in reign. As you remember, when Josiah came into the reign, the word of God was not being preached. And as they were cleaning out the temple, they found these books of the law, and he says, hey, what's in here? And all of a sudden, they pull these word out, and he says, we've got to know this. We have strayed so far from the word of God, we got to get it in the hands of the people. And they began to read the books of the law to the people. This is the era that these young men came into. I think they even stood out in the rain for 3 days. Was that right? When they read these books of the law? You also remember the prophet that was available at that time was who? Jeremiah. Did Jeremiah have a school? A lot of the prophets did have schools. And in that case, they would have been around, as near as they can tell, between 13 and 17, and under Jeremiah, the prophet's tutelage. Do you remember when a group of men were brought before into Jeremiah's presence, and God said, I want you to put these men in front of me, and I want you to set wine before them? And these were not Israelites, these were Rechabites. These were a nomadic people who had lived and moved in and out among the land, and they put this wine in front of these men, and the men looked at the wine and said, no. God told me to put this in front of you here. No. They had decided to forsake not the law of their mother and the teaching of their father. These boys saw that happen. There's a good chance of it anyhow. I can't prove it. It made an impact upon their soul. Here's some young men that have wine set in front of them and refuse to drink it. And if within a few years they were carried off to this land of the Chaldeans, and they said, you know, we're going to be like that. We saw an example. We're going to follow in those instructions. And they did it. And their eyes were enlightened. Their understanding was open. They followed not only in the instructions of their father, they followed the instructions of their instructors, even in the land of Chaldea. And they were far better and had proceeded far beyond what the other boys their age had done. And the day arose when the king had a dream, and no one could interpret it. And Daniel said, I'll interpret your dream, because the dreams are given to God. And when Daniel interpreted his dream, it says they clothed Daniel with scarlet and did what? Put a chain of gold around his neck. My son, forsake not the instruction of your father. It shall be a chain of gold about your neck. Daniel had worn that chain at a very young age, a chain of honor, and he was made first in the kingdom. Under the king. Do you want that kind of honor? Yes, we want that kind of honor. Are you willing to go through those steps that's going to take you to get that honor is the question. It's the instructions of your father that you receive them. Now you remember there's another young man, taught at home by the way, that he also received that chain of honor, and his name was Joseph. And we heard about him already this morning. But Joseph also had spent 13 years in Egypt, learned through the instructions of Egypt, and he's brought out of the dungeon, brought before the king, he interpreted the king's dream. And what happened? Pharaoh put a ring on his finger, gave him vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. Joseph, was it worth it at age 30? Follow in the instructions of your father. Was it worth it? It was a chain of honor about his neck. Jesus Christ came to this earth, and on his last priestly prayer in John 17, he says, Father, as you have glorified me, I have given this glory to them. Now, it wasn't given in a chain of honor. But he said, I took the glory as I subjected myself to you, that you gave me glory. And he said, as these disciples and these men have followed me, I have taken that glory and given it to them because they have heeded my instruction. And here, it's been passed down from generation to generation. And in Matthew 28, Jesus says, all power, all authority has been given unto me in heaven and earth. You go. You go and teach all nations to observe everything that I've commanded you. Hear the instruction of a father. It shall be glory to your head and a chain of gold about your neck. So here we come. Authority. Authority comes through being instructed. You don't just get handed a position of authority. And we as parents and we as teachers and training our children, our purpose for our homeschools, what is our purpose anyhow? Some parents think their purpose for homeschooling is their children so they can keep their children under their thumb. Then I can regulate and control my children that way. And they do it. But what happens when those children get older and all they did was had to stay under their parents' thumb? That's not the goal of the Christian homeschool. The goal is to take the glory and authority that you have and place it about around the neck of your child. How are we supposed to do that? The job is not to keep them under your power, but to empower them to live self-controlled lives. Lives freely lived under the authority of God. That is our goal and our purpose. Now, I sat in a Sunday school class 40 years ago. And there was a teacher up there, and he was trying to exhort us. We shouldn't go to, I was raised in public school, and a lot of churches were bringing the gospel into public schools, and he had a separate spot where you could go and study the Bible. And he was teaching the students in the class, saying, we shouldn't go to their religious classes. It didn't make much sense to one of the students, because they were sending us to public schools and telling us not to go to the religious classes, and we were allowed to learn all the secular stuff, but we weren't allowed. And one of the students in the class said, I don't understand. He said, you don't want us to go to those classes, but why don't you homeschool your children then? And he says, I'll never forget, I still picture him. His name was Wendell, and he said, because I don't think we could get the job done. He said, in fact, I know we couldn't. It makes an impact upon me. What do you mean we can't get the job done? You mothers who are homeschooling mothers, you know the trials of it. But can you get the job done? Can you do it? Have you been given a task that's just too big for you? How would my wife feel if I said, dear, I would like to take you, get you to enjoy a wonderful night, a wonderful date, but I tell you what, I am not any good at dating. I don't know the great places to eat. I don't have a nice vehicle. I don't know how to say the right words. What I've done here is I decided to stay home and babysit, and I've hired a professional dater to take you out and show you a good night on the town. Now, my wife is quiet, but she would squawk at that one. No, I don't care. You cannot delegate a dater to me. I don't care how good he is at it. I have no interest in having that delegated. I don't care how bad you fail. You are the one that I want to go out with. But we've done the same thing with our children and said, you know, I'm no good at this. There are professionals who are good at this. What is the goal and the purpose of schooling your children anyhow? Is it to take a bunch of education and dump it into their brains? Or is it, thank you. I've never had that good of an amen. We're not trying to dump a bunch of education into their brains. We are trying to develop a relationship called discipleship. And we're passing along on information from one to the next. Strong families are the building block of the nation, they're the building block of the church, they're the building block of communities. You can delegate the washing of your clothes, you can delegate the cooking of your meals, you can delegate the cleaning up of your vehicles, you can delegate a lot of stuff in this life. You can even delegate someone to mow your lawn. But can you delegate a relationship to your child for a professional teacher? That's something that belongs to you as a parent. And you are going to give your all to that goal of taking the truth, the authority that you have, and placing it as a gold ring of honor around the necks of your children. You will make mistakes, and that's okay. You will learn as well. Socrates described education as this, one of the wisest men of the days of the men before Jesus. Socrates said, education is the kindling of a flame, not the filling of a vessel. You've got to remember that. Education is the kindling of a flame, not the filling of a vessel. If you can kindle a flame in the hearts of your children, you have done your job. And you're going to do it with the home fires. The fires of home. And if you think you can't do it because you're too amateur, I'd like you to consider two of the greatest ships that were ever built upon the face of this earth. One was the Titanic, and you know the fate. It was built by professionals, engineers, designers, and the best materials, and was claimed that it could not sink, and it went on its maiden voyage and went down. The second one was built by a family. Were they carpenters? What skills they had? I do not know. They had a pretty good design. And it was the Ark. And consider which one lasted a little bit longer than the other. An amateur in the hands of God is better than the power of a professional any day of the week, of the year, of the month, for eternity. If you are willing to do the job, if you have a heart that's willing, God will use you to build a ship to the saving of your family. If not, if you got to hire a professional to do it, you'll get professional results, which might be less than you want. So let's begin. We're going to kindle a flame here. If I can. The flames of home. Now, a flame gives off light and warmth. Light and warmth is what a flame is meant to do. That's what our homes are supposed to have. And it takes light and it takes warmth to kindle relationships. You know, you can send your children off to professional teachers and you will not get a relationship with your child. That doesn't mean you cannot do it and have a relationship with their child. And if you can't do it, I understand. Sometimes they're single parents, sometimes they're health reasons. We have friends in Germany, and it's absolutely illegal for them to homeschool. So I'm being sympathetic. I'm not trying to condemn anybody. But for us that have an opportunity, I want you to consider what an opportunity you have. And are you willing to take that opportunity? Education is the movement from darkness to light. It's the movement from being cold to being warm. It's the bridge which connects a vision to the reality. From earth to heaven. It's a process that binds two entities together, you and your children. The discipler and his students. The disciples and their master. It takes two things to develop relationships. I do not think you will be able to develop a relationship without them. The first is time. Time. And there is nothing more suitable to give you more time with your children and with your family than to homeschool your children right there. It's going to give you lots of time together. Together means to gather. You take two entities and you gather them together into a family. Family comes from the word familiar. Or familiar comes from family. I'm not sure which came first. But it's familiar. The familiarity that a family has is a tremendous benefit to teaching. There is no substitute for time. And there are parents who say, well, I give quality time to my children because I don't have quantity time to give them. And I have to correct you. To have quality time, you must have quantity time. Oh, I'll give my wife quality time because I don't have quantity time to give. If I'm ever going to get to know her, I'm going to have to spend quantity time as well. Once a year will not do it. Delegated time is not sufficient. Once you pass the borders of childhood, you can never return again. If you forfeit those precious hours when your children are the most influential and delegate that to another, you have forfeited the opportunity for a relationship for the rest of your life. We need to take that time. The goal is positive communication and relational warmth. Just because you're homeschooled doesn't mean you're going to have relational warmth. It takes energy as well. It takes time. It takes time to communicate. John chapter 10, verse 2 through 5 says, he that enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. Or he who enters in your door is a shepherd of your family. And it's you men. You are the shepherd of your sheep. You're not just the breadwinner. You're not just the man who makes the money, who calls the shots and throws his weight around. You are called to be a shepherd. And what does a shepherd do for his sheep? The sheep hear his voice. Yeah, they need to listen to me. And he goes and calls them own by name and leads them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him. For they know his voice, and a stranger they will not follow, but will flee from him because they know not the voice of strangers. Too many fathers are strangers in their own homes. And their sheep are not following them. Why? Because the father's voice is strange. He's not there. And I know some of you fathers have to go out to work. But you cannot be a stranger to your children. You've got to know the hearts of your children if you're ever going to have any relational warmth, if there is going to be a home fire in the hearts of your children. Who knows better your children? There is no teacher that they get a new teacher every year that can know your children. You know your children. You know their ins and outs. You know how they respond to stress. You know how they respond to embarrassment. You know how they respond to questions, to adversities. And you know best how to help them remove those barriers and lay aside their weights so that they can grow into be a man of God. Time. Communication. Communication. What is a better place to communicate than every day, day in, day out, in a home setting? We must be communicators. Hebrews 13:16 says, to do good and to communicate, forget not. Don't forget to communicate. I realize you look at that up and that word communicate means share. But what a better place to share thoughts, to share feelings, to share stories, to share values than in the home. Do good and communicate. My father was not a good communicator. My grandfather was a first-generation Anabaptist. He came from the Lutherans. That's where the Ruffiner name came from, into the Anabaptist circles. He was converted from the Lutheran church to the Apostolic church. And he didn't know how to communicate either. And my dad did the same thing as his dad did. They didn't communicate. Fathers, I don't know what your upbringing has been. Perhaps your father never communicated with you, but you must communicate. That means you take words and give them to your son. You establish eye contact and look at your sons and look at your daughters. Communicate with your wives. Be there. Connect. What is an offense anyhow? Woe unto the world because of offenses. When does a child get offended? You've all seen child offenses. Some of you got relatives where people have left their homes, run away from home, gone astray. They're offended. They don't want anything to do with church life. They don't want anything to do with their dad. What offended them? Someone who did not communicate the love of Christ. That is offensive, and there's no greater offense than to not take the opportunity you have as a father and communicate the love of Christ to your children. It steals your time, and we give our time to other things. We give our time to making money, and we give our time to our neighbors and sometimes to missions or whatever we're doing, to church work, and if we fail to communicate to our children, we have traded. We have traded a relationship with our children for something of lesser value, and that's not wisdom. Peer socialization is the survival of the fittest. There's a shame and honor culture. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed, says the proverb writer. Peer-driven societies. Will you take your third grader and throw him into the whole bucket full of other third graders and expect to keep his attention? Expect to keep his honor and his respect? Will you throw him into a group of teenagers? Will you let the schools teach your values? Financial values, scriptural values, personal values. Will you let them teach them your songs? Will you let them come home and speak their lingo, the slang, the euphemisms, and worse than that, their attitudes, because they're being taught to disrespect their parents on every side. The warmth of relationship steals its way into churches. I don't know if any of you have read the Apocrypha. There's the Maccabees. The Maccabees was written, it's not I don't claim that it's inspired, but it was those silent 400 years before the years of Christ following Malachi and following the John the Baptist, who interrupted the earth with a shout and said the kingdom of heaven is at hand. But 400 years in there, there was a group of a family called the Maccabees, and they were fighting for the truths of Israel, trying to maintain the sanity of the religion that their forefathers had given to them. And in 2 Maccabees chapter 4, verse 12, things had deteriorated because the high priest himself, Jason, or the would-be high priest, Jason, has come and has secularized education. And I want you to listen to this, what happened, and I want you to apply it to what you have seen in your life. With perverse delight, Jason established a gymnasium at the very foot of the citadel, where he induced the noblest young men to wear the Greek hat. The craze for Hellenism and the adoption of forum custom reached such a pitch through the outrageous wickedness of Jason, the renegade and would-be high priest, that the priests no longer cared about the service of the altar. Disdaining the temple and neglecting the sacrifices, they hastened at the signal for the games to take part in the unlawful exercises in the arena. What their ancestors had regarded as honors, they despised. And what the Greeks esteemed as glory, they prized highly. For this reason, they found themselves in serious trouble. The very people whose manner of life they emulated and whom they desired to imitate in everything became their enemies and their oppressors. It's the story of education. There's nothing new under the sun. They came for sports, games, and secular Hellenism, the wearing of the Greek, the world that Alexander the Great had propagated before the time of Christ, and that became everything. And it came into the temple of the Jews, and it replaced true Christianity with the world. The warmth of relationship must be maintained. Time of communication. We move on. The second candle in the home is the light of discipleship. We have the warmth of relationship. You must have a relationship. You must also have the light, the truth of discipleship. Behold, all ye that kindle a fire, says Isaiah, that compass about yourselves with sparks. Walk in the light of your own fire. You've got lots of answers. Walk in the light of your fire. Is there a fire burning in your home? Is there discipleship happening in your home? As a father making known to the children thy truths, you're going to have to teach some things if you're going to light a fire of discipleship, and that's values. We must teach values. They must be readily shared. It's the iron law of discipleship. Luke 16, verse 40, the disciple is not above his master. But everyone that is perfect shall be as his master. The father, the discipler, the master is setting forth the example, and the disciples are following in it. That's the goal. That's our job. The public school education model is broken. They've pulled the children out of the homes, brought them to an institution, told the children and gave the children new values, and said, Dad, you go to work. Mom, you take it easy. Maybe you go to work too. And we will take care of the children. Why did they do that? Because they had an agenda for society. They knew that if we get these children in our agenda, we will make good workers. We'll have an economic system that works. They didn't care about the home. And they undermined the very home that was the building blocks of the nation. All in exchange for good workers. For someone who can go to an institution and abide there and work there. Roy Baumeister, he's a psychologist professor at the Florida State University. He gave himself, has made it his lifelong study, to study self-esteem. When he got excited about self-esteem, he says, this is going to be the answer for solid American citizenship. That if everyone can learn self-esteem, we will have American citizens that are able and profitable to help this whole entire nation grow. And he studied it for 30 years. He had hoped it to be the answer for society. He hoped it to do away with crime and sin. And at the end of 30 years, he said, there is not nearly as much benefit as we had hoped. It's one of the biggest disappointments of my career. Can you imagine studying for something for 30 years, expecting to find the answer, and you found out it was not an answer at all? Do we think we can improve on Christ's model? Fathers, instruct your children. Mothers, teach the law to your little ones. They will be a gold chain of honor about your neck. Instead, the children have been hiked off to a public classroom. The herd mentality, boy-girl relationships, body image, music, peer pressure, violence, fashions, idolatry on every hand influences our children. Guide your families, dads. Guide your families, mom. Seth Godin said, large-scale education was not developed to motivate kids or create scholars. It was invented to churn out adults who worked well within the system. And we have churned out production factory economics, and we've become the greatest nation on the world. But where are our families today? We teach the values. We teach attitudes. Attitudes. Do your children have attitudes? Of course they do. Are they bad-attitudes or beatitudes? Some of both. If you're like us, we had bad-attitudes someday. And we'd say, son, that's a bad-attitude. We need the beatitudes. And we got 20 years to instruct them and to give them attitudes which are actually profitable so that they can grow and learn. What do you think, Simon? Who do the kings take taxes from? They're walking along. What do you think? Well, who do they take taxes from? Their own children or the strangers? Well, I suppose some strangers. Okay, so the children of the kingdom are free? Yeah, I guess we don't have to pay taxes. No, you go catch a fish, take the money out, pay the tax anyhow. That's your attitude, Simon. We're not above paying taxes. Sure, before God, God is our kingdom. But he said, we're not going to offend them. Don't go offending them. If someone asks you to take their pack a mile, a soldier, take it too and see what happens. Jesus was constantly teaching attitudes, beatitudes to his disciple. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are they that mourn. They should be comforted. He taught the beatitudes. We have an opportunity. It's the first indicator that our children are struggling is when they have bad attitudes. Who better can fix those attitudes than mom and dad in the home? But you put another teacher in there, you put a church school in there, and all of a sudden you got a whole other thing you got to deal with. Well, is it the attitude of the teacher? They got attitudes too. Is it the attitudes of the students? Who can do it better than you as a parent? Who is called? The home is designed for discipleship. You know the visible strengths. You know the weaknesses. You know the attitudes. And that's what we discipline. Don't discipline failures, okay? Your child can fail, and they will learn. The best things I've ever learned in life, I've learned from my own failures. I could have learned it from others, but I had to fail myself, and I did. I fell flat on my face many times. It's okay if our children fail. It's okay if they give you right or wrong answers. There was a young man who was helping his dad in his store. He was 14 years old. He brings a big sack of flour and set it down on the counter, and he didn't realize that another worker's glasses were under on that counter, and there was nothing but smithereens. And she said, "Yay! I'm so sick of those glasses anyhow. I get new glasses." But his dad wasn't impressed. And he took the boy out behind and tanned him. And I wondered, what in the world? It was an honest mistake. You don't teach that way. You're teaching values. You're teaching attitudes. Warn them that you're unruly, of course. But how about the feeble-minded? What about the child that just doesn't get it? What are we supposed to do with them? Hit him on the backside? It says comfort the feeble-minded. Support the weak. Who knows better whether your child's being unruly, feeble-minded, or weak? You know better. It's your job. Instruct them. You have a keen insight, and you have an advantage if you'll use it. Dr. John Wesley Taylor at the Moore Academy, he noted the homeschool advantage here. And these are unbiased social scientists. They just study social, and here's what he said. On the global scale, half of the homeschoolers scored at or above the 91st percentile. This condition may be due to higher achievement and mastery levels, independent study characteristics, or one-on-one tutoring situation in the homeschool environment. It could also be due, perhaps, to the higher levels of parental interest and communication. Independence from peers, a sense of responsibility, and lowered anxiety levels. They did a survey, 11,739 homeschool students in all 50 states. Academic achievement. This is just secular. Homeschoolers on average scored 37% points higher above the public school students on the SAT tests. We're teaching beatitudes. We're not just pouring information. When my children went to take their GED tests, they didn't know who the social people of the era were. They didn't know what singers were singers and who the pop artists were, but they knew everything else. And the lady said, "I've never seen anyone score so high on these tests. The only thing they didn't know was their regular secular history." That's okay. We are teaching attitudes. And finally, the third fire in the home, it's the crucible. This one's the negative one, but it is a fire in the home. I'll leave it here. It's the crucible of companionship. There is nothing in this world which creates companionship like a crucible, like trials and temptations. Now, I went to my 40th year class reunion last night in Doylestown, Ohio. And there was a man that I went to school with. We called him Peanut then. He was just a little guy. Boy, he's bigger than me now and bigger around. But he spent 30 years in the military, in the Navy. It was his career. He's retired from the Navy. And I said, Darren, you spent 30 years in the Navy. He says, yeah, that's... I said, there's something I don't understand, because most of the people that I know that join the Army or the Navy are the losers, can I say it that way? The ones, the misfits, they don't fit anywhere else. They don't hold very good jobs very well. They get in fights. They don't disconnect from their families. And all those people that I know that have gone to the military are that type of people. And he was not that one. He was raised in a Christian home. He was a patriot. But most of the young folks, they go to the military. I says, what in the world holds the military together when you get this kind of people? And he says, it's the fact that you're in there with these people and each other is all that you got. Each other's all that you got, and you stick together through the thick and the thin, through the trials, through the fires. And he was over there in Desert Storm. He was over in the Middle East for many, many years in his life, in the combat zone and whatnot. There was a crucible there, and the crucible is melting people together. But what happens when things get hot in your home, when times get tough in your home, sometimes with your husband, sometimes with your wife, sometimes between your children? You just give up, or are you all that you got? Are there other options, the out button that we could exit, and maybe we can send them out here? No, one of the strengths of the home is you're all that you got. And that's a good strength. God has designed the home that way. Maybe you don't like the instruction of your father. Maybe he's a little bit carnal in the way he acts. But it's all that you got. And you learn. Through that trial, through that pressing, you learn to work together. And that is a lifelong thing that you will use the rest of your life. And we wonder why our church is constantly... there's in front door, out the back door, in the front door, out the back door. It's because we have discarded the homes in the same way. We don't stick it out. We can just go to the church down the road if someone doesn't treat me right. And I'd like to examine that. Is that really what builds strong churches? We stick it out. It's the crucible of companionship. The togetherness that happens whenever we go through the flames of hard things. Discouragement. Discouragement is going to come. Count on it. Might not come the first year and you got one student, but it'll come sooner or later, ladies, and you've already got it, most of you. You have been discouraged. We're discipling the mind. We think we're failing, but are we really, truly failing? Paul Meyer observed this. He says, 90% of those who fail are not actually defeated. They just quit. You're not actually defeated. You're just discouraged and you quit. Don't quit. You've just taught your children to quit. You stick it out even though you become discouraged. Well, I'm not qualified to teach. Maybe you're not. Are you qualified to learn? Really, moms, that's what it's all about, learning. Parents model learning. When I graduated from high school in 1984, 40 years ago, I had a friend who also graduated. His name was Wayne. I chose an apprenticeship in a machine shop, and I spent the next 4 years as an apprentice, learning at the hands of a master and learning in the evenings. He went to college, went to Akron University, and he studied computer science. At the end of 4 years, I stayed on with my job. He got a job at one of the insurance companies up there, which one what it is, up in Lodi area. And I asked him, so Wayne, how much of what you learned in college did you use on your job? And he said, 5%. You got to be kidding me. I use 95% of what I learned in my business. He says, well, I learned how to learn. I can appreciate that. He goes, I learned that when you don't know something, there are resources to go to be had and to find the answers. he's done very well. He stayed at the company, and he's one of those economic persons which has proved well to the company. He's climbed the corporate ladder. He's way at the top of a very prestigious insurance company, which is fine. I'm not judging for that. I love him, and we're still friends. But there comes a time when things are discouraged. We're not necessarily here to try to fit into the world system. We're here to learn. You're here to plant seeds of creativity. When you plant a seed of creativity, what do you get? You get a tree of creativity. A seed of curiosity in the heart of a child grows into a seed of creativity. We're not afraid to use, we learn to use the resources that we have. I heard a story of in Uganda, of a woman who wanted to homeschool her children there, but she had one problem. She was illiterate. And so the churches, the ladies from that church gathered around her, and they taught her English. And they taught her how to learn. And now she's teaching her children at home. There are resources available. Plenty of resources. Online resources if you need to. Be careful with them, but they're there. We can learn. We can grow. You can actually do it more than you think you can. You just get discouraged like I do. Change. There's a second one. The crucible of companionship requires change. Most of us don't like change. We resist change. But education must be flexible, especially when we're in our home. You send your children to school, and the education is not flexible. You stand in the drinking fountain line, and your children learn to submit to unflexible rules, which has some merit and value. Would God that all Americans would know how to submit to some rules. But the problem is, when we quit learning, we start dying. To cease to learn is to begin to die. Learning is a lifelong process. It's not something you just learned in school. I'll never forget the day I went to school. That day? You mean you're supposed to go back? You're supposed to stay in school for the rest of your life. Henry Ford says, anyone who stops learning is old, whether they're 20 or 80. You stop learning, you're old. I don't care if you're 20 or 80. That was his concept. And he learned till the day he was died, till he days died. Change is the end result of all learning. Learning is about change. If you're not learning anything, you're not changing. If you're not changing, you're not learning. It's synonymous with each other. How many of you ever read that book, Who Moved My Cheese? It's an old book, Spencer Johnson. It's a business tool. And it's just an interesting, it's a parable, and it's worth doing, it's worth, in my opinion, worth sharing with your children. Your children even enjoy it. It's an imaginary parable, but it's four little people, two mice and two men, and it's all about change and how these mice learned where to find the cheese, and they went to the same thing every time, and they went back to the same spot, and all of a sudden, one day, the cheese was gone, and all of a sudden, life was in a turmoil. When we get so used to our comfortable lives, we can't handle when change comes. And all of a sudden, our whole world gets turned upside down when change comes. Mark Twain says the only person on earth who likes change is a wet baby. So you can stick that one in your pocket and remember, it's time to do some changing. Problems. You're going to have problems. It's part of the crucible. Expect problems. You got married. Why'd you get married? You thought it was going to be eternal bliss. Well, guess what? You know better now, don't you? Well, maybe some of you who have only been married for a few months might not know any better, but the Bible actually says, you know, he that is married shall have what? Trouble in the flesh. You were told that. If they didn't tell you that, they should have, but you read it. You're going to have trouble in the flesh if you're married. Why did you go ahead and get married anyhow? Because troubles are not problem. Troubles are actually good for us. That's why we married someone different than us. That's why we don't marry our families. We married people totally different from us, and God expects us to get along. Well, yeah, we should. We need to. It's good for us. We become Christ-like when we experience troubles. But what do you do when your child won't listen? They won't pay attention. Maybe I should get him diagnosed. He might be ADD. Yeah, he just doesn't pay attention. Well, we got troubles. Maybe if I send him to school, they can fix it. The professionals surely know how to fix Johnny. Well, the problem is never going to be solved. You might take the problem and pass it along to somebody else, but Johnny's heart needed changed. And it's your job, fathers. It's your job, mothers. Take up the challenge. Problems are not a problem. Problems are actually opportunities for growth and solution. It was Alexander Fleming. He worked at St. Mary's Hospital in London. He had his cultures that he was doing and trying to figure out, and some of you know this story. You've taught it to your children probably. And he set his cultures by a window, and someone opened the window or closed it. I forget what the situation was, and it ruined his cultures. Oh, this experiment's done now. It's all done. And all of a sudden, they realized through the whole situation, the mold began to grow on these cultures. They realized and got the remedy or the fix called penicillin. Wonderful discovery from a problem. How big of a problem was that problem? The problem became the solution. It's that way in your home too. You got problems. Let the problem become your solution. Let it inspire you and catapult you on. There's a lot of stuff you're going to forget. But it's been said that education is what is left after everything we've learned is forgotten. Okay? Education is what is left after everything you've learned is forgotten. That's your education. That's what you get. All right? Who knows what a quadratic equation is? Maybe some of you? The Pythagorean theorem. What is that? I think that's a squared plus b squared. You know, what about a hyperbole? Children, do you know what a hyperbole is? Oh, I remember something about that. Okay. Some of you know, I'm sure, about that wonderful word called an onomatopoeia. Do you know what an onomatopoeia? Raise your hand if you know what an onomatopoeia is. Okay, good. You got some on top of some of moms, all right? Did you remember that from school or did you? Okay. I remember learning at school, but it took homeschool for me to relearn it. Now I know what it is, but I forgot what Mrs. Cook taught me in the seventh grade. That went, but it came back. I relearned. You know, problems can be relearned. People that I've forgotten, you know, who was Magellan? You know, Fernando Cortez, what did he do? Samuel Bowditch and Ernest Shackleton and some of those men that we learned in school, all of a sudden it revived when I became the teacher again. It was a wonderful opportunity to learn. The problems that were there and the problems that it took for homeschooling became part of the solution as we learned alongside of our children. What a wonderful home fire was burning there. When children do not learn to change, they create problems. Deborah Stipek, she's the Dean of Education at Stanford University. She said it this way. She said, I often get students in graduate school who make straight A's all their lives. And for the first time, they get tough feedback, the kind that you need to develop skills. They act very badly. I keep a box of Kleenex in my office because they haven't ever dealt with it before. Poor straight A students, but never had to experience this tough problem, change, working through change. You know, that's the way problems are. They're to rise above. That's what builds character in us. Not straight A's. That doesn't produce character in your child. Failures. Simon, Satan hath desired to sift you as wheat, but I prayed for you that your faith fail not. When you're converted, strengthen your brethren. Failure was in Simon's future, but it wasn't a problem. We can fail. The problem is not whether we failed or not, but did we get back up? Your children know how to fail and get back up. The only failure in life is a failure that you do not learn from. The only failure in life is a failure that you do not learn from. If you learn from it, that was not a failure. You've gained something eternal. Instill that attitude in your children. It's the crucible companionship. You go through failures together. It was John Chrysostom. An ancient writer wrote it this way on raising children. He says, like the creators of statues, give all of your leisure time to fashioning these statues. Make them athletes for Christ. He compared it to sculptures, and he says, you're just chipping off this block until it's shaped into the way you want it. He says, make them like the Olympic athletes. Now, I don't know if you know it or not, but if you wanted to be an Olympic athlete in America today, you know what? You would never go to a school. You'd be a homeschooled child. because they know that if you want to succeed at anything like the Olympics, you're going to have to dedicate your whole life to it, and you must be flexible. And so all the Olympic athletes today are homeschooled. And I can't say 100% of that, but in general, that's true. They all homeschool because they have a crown that they want, and it's that Olympic gold crown. Do you have a crown that you want to put on your children, an ornament about their head, and a gold chain about their neck? Is it worth the sacrifice? Is it worth a few failures? Is it worth that kind of dedication? Is it worth the fears that you have? And you have them, don't you? You've experienced them. We've had fears. Is this going to work? Are we getting anywhere? It seems like we're going backwards. It does at times. You feel like giving up. You feel like you're not a good enough educator. But remember Albert Einstein, that fellow they say is kind of smart. He had some advice for you. And he says, anyone who has not made a mistake has never tried anything new. If you've not made a mistake, you've never tried anything new. It's okay. You're going to fail some. We can't do it, we think. Really? You can't do it? Are you sure? What can't you do? What can't you do about relating to your children? What is it that's beyond you? You know, as the children of Israel were marching toward the promised land, and they sent 12 spies in, and two came back and says, it's a wonderful land, let's do it. And 10 said no. There are 5 people who don't think they can do it to everyone who thinks they can. Which one are you? Which are you? I can't do it. It's too big of a job. The giants and the hurdles are way too big. Yes, I know there'd be benefits if I could do it. But oh, the struggle to do it. Hang in there. We read the story. Listen to Caleb and Joshua. Come on, listen to them. We know the end of the story. If they just have gone, and oh, you got 40 years in the wilderness if you don't go. And I still read through the book of Exodus and still wish they'd have made a different decision there. Oh, they had some things to learn, didn't they? Oh, we have some things to learn. Are we willing to press on, to press in? I can't say it much better than Jamie Erickson did in a book he wrote called Homeschool Bravery. And this is for you sisters that feel the weight of this thing. She feels it as well. Most mothers, myself included, live in a committed lifelong relationship with self-doubt, fear, anxiety, and tension. They seem always to be the byproducts of our love and investment. We hear the gentle whispers of worry and wonder if we can raise our children right, raise them well, raise them at all. For the homeschool mother, that self-doubt is magnified by the full weight of her child's education. She feels the burden of proof that her children will learn all that they need to know and be as good, if not better, than those taught by the other guys. And if they don't, well, the blame must surely fall to her. When you decide to homeschool, you opted to swim upstream, joining a group of people who have decided to go in different educational direction from the rest of the world, and is different and always a little bit scary, especially as it relates to your kids. It would be much easier if homeschooling came with a just add water and stir label on the package. But it doesn't. It comes with a lot of questions. It comes with a lot of unknowns. Consequently, it comes with a lot of fears. But where will these fears drive us? Will they drive us apart, or will they draw us together? It's the crucible. It's the fire of companionship. Well, we've got 3 flames here. We've got companionship, we have discipleship, and we have relationship. If that's all you have, you've got a lot. If that's all you have, you're missing a tremendous ingredient. Children, look up here. Alvia, what is this? What shape is this? Somebody, shout it out. Yes, it's a triangle. 3-sided. What kind of a triangle is this? Next group up, what kind of a triangle? out loud. It's an equilateral triangle. All sides, all the laterals are equal. Okay? There are three points on it, three things. Anyone on the fire squad around here, do you do any of that? Okay? You know what a fire is? Three elements in a fire. Heat, oxygen, and fuel. Every fire has heat, oxygen, and fuel. If you have heat, oxygen, and fuel, do you automatically have a fire? You need one more ingredient. You need an exothermic reaction. Here's a science lesson for you. You got oxygen, heat, and fuel. You have an exothermic reaction. They have to have a chemical reaction to each other. That's what fire extinguishers do. They actually disperse the three elements from each other. They don't move anything away. They just pull it away, and the fire goes down. So this fourth dimension is vital if there's going to be a fire burning in our homes. All right? $20 question. You got the triangle. What shape is this? What is it? Pyramid? That's close, but a pyramid actually has a square bottom. The pyramids, they have a square bottom. That's a five-sided polygon. This one is a four-sided polygon. Anyone else? That was a brave soul here. I didn't expect you to get it. This is called a tetrahedron. It's a tetrahedron. It's a four-sided polygon, four equal sides, four equal triangles. This is a four-dimensional triangle. There must be a fourth fire in your home that's going to add a depth to your home that the three that you own right now cannot ever do all by themselves. We've got to discover the fourth man in the fire. And you can just about guess who that is, because we're going back to our homeschooled boys that we spoke about at the beginning. You remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, well, that was not the name that their godly parents gave them. It was Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael. Hananiah means Jehovah has favored us. Ananiah means Jehovah is helping us and will help us. Mishael is what my middle name is from, Michael. Mishael is the same word, and that means it's a statement of who God is. It's actually a question, but it's who God is. It's a statement about God is. It's kind of like I am. God is. These three Hebrew boys were under a tremendous fire in a tremendous crucible. And the king said, I want, at the sound of the music, I want you boys, everybody, to bow down before this idol and worship. They came before the king. These boys have been taught well by their parents. Remember the instruction of your father. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. You shall not bow down. They're in a strange land. They could have just bowed down and worshiped God, but they didn't. You remember the instruction of their father. And the king rose up and says, listen, young upstarts, smart Alex. You think you know it all. You might get called a smart Alex if you're actually even doing right. Here's a furnace. Here's an idol. Take your pick. There was a response that came in three sections. And I'm thinking that each of the three boys gave an input to this one. Because through each of the sections is generated from their name. O king, we're not careful to answer to you. If it be so, our God, who we serve, is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace. Our Jehovah has favored us, says Hananiah. Jehovah has favored us. If God be for us, who can be against us? And Hananiah, or Azariah, perks up and says, and he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. Azariah says, God is our help. He'll deliver us, O king. And Mishael comes along. He says, but if not, be it known to you, we're not going to bow down to your idol anyway. God is who God is, and we do not change. We will not bend. We will not bow. And the king rose up, and he was furious, and he lit the furnace 7 times hotter. And they cast the men in there, astonished. I thought we cast 3 men to that fire. I thought there were 3 men that should be burning in there. And lo, behold, I see 4 men unbound and walking down there. It's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego before the fiery coals they trod. But the form of the 4th man that I see, it looks like the Son of God. Don't have a homeschool without it, brothers and sisters. You need that 4th man in your fire, burning, actively energizing you, your wife, your children, and your family. In 100 years, it won't matter how much money you made, how big you built your business, or how many farms you bought. It won't matter how many vacations you took and how many things you saw in this world. Nor will it matter how much nice of vehicles you drove and how shiny the paint was on your vehicles and the prettiness and the decorations in your home. It won't matter at all. But the influence you've had on your children will still be around. You take the opportunity you have and teach and instruct and connect with those children God has given you. If the 4th man in the fire is in your home, the whole world will know that you left a mighty big footprint in the soil where you have walked. God bless you, each one.